This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. On this segment, we're going to be doing some estate planning discussion, focusing on should you transfer your property into a living trust, and are there any tax issues that may be involved? My guest is David Hellman, an attorney who's a specialist in both tax law and estate planning, trust, and probate law. He's certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. Mr. Hellman is also a certified public accountant. His offices are in Marin County. This segment of Your Legal Rights is made possible by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. The program is also funded by the Family Law Section of the State Bar, the Trust and Estate Section of the State Bar, and the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. David, welcome back to the program.
Thank you very much.
Very nice to have you here. And I guess we should start with the most obvious question. Why create a living trust? What's the point?
Well,
is this to pay attorneys? We got to give them money?
Well, it is more expensive to create the trust than just do a simple will. But the purpose of doing a trust is two basic reasons. One is to avoid probate on death. And second is to provide a mechanism for administering your assets if you become incapacitated. It can be more specific than what would be through a power of attorney, so you can actually control what's going on a little better.
Are there any favorable tax consequences if you put your property into a trust?
No, there's no income tax savings, there's no estate tax savings, and there's no creditor protection from doing it either.
So we just can't hide these assets,
no,
huh?
You
no
can't.
Matter what we do.
No, in California, they do not recognize self-settled trusts, which this would be, for purposes of creditor protection.
And of course, the IRS wouldn't recognize that either.
Correct, because it's a revocable trust, so for tax purposes, the IRS doesn't consider it as a valid taxable entity. Mm-hmm. Only when somebody dies and the trust becomes irrevocable is the trust then a taxpayer in a separate entity.
I see. Why do we want to avoid probate?
Probate is expensive. The fees are, if you follow the statutory schedule, the executor and the attorney are both entitled to 4% on the first $100,000, 3% on the next $100,000, 2% on the next $800,000, and then from there on it goes to 1% up to $5 million, and then 0.5%, and then it's about $10 million.
That's a lot of money.
Right. The court at some point finally decides what's reasonable. Now, frequently people will negotiate with their attorneys to do an hourly basis or something less than the statutory mm-hmm. fees if the amount of work that's going to need to happen by the attorney is not that much. Mm-hmm. And frequently the executor, if the executor is a beneficiary, will not charge the executor fee because that's income taxable, whereas receiving the benefits is non-taxable.
I see.
I mean, there's also other reasons. Besides the fees, probate takes a minimum of 6 months, and usually it's a minimum. It gets closer to a year in time because court calendars are pretty backed up. There is a month that has to be after you file a petition for probate, which is what you do after a person dies. There is a while to get on the court calendar. You need at least a minimum of a month. And most court calendars are going to put you out 2 months. Once the person is named as executor or administrator of the estate and receives letters mm-hmm. from the court, then there's a four-month creditor's claim filing period. And in the simplest of estates...
That's, of course, federal law, is it not?
Not state law.
State law, okay.
Yeah. So then after that, you've got another... You need to file a closing petition, and then you go back on the court calendar again, so you're at least another month there before you get on the court calendar. So you're looking at a minimum of 6 months, and it's more likely closer to a year. So some people feel that that's too long of a time to have the assets administered. And the third basic reason is for... privacy. Court records on probates are public files, and anybody can go in and look at them.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. A living trust, assuming that you don't end up with any litigation, it's a private record, and there's nothing
that's
public.
You don't have to file anything. When you set up a living trust, you don't have to file this with the county recorder's office.
That's correct.
Well, that's very interesting. Okay. What though, if someone doesn't have a lot of money? Let's say their estate is something, the net estate is something like not in excess of $150,000. What should someone like that do?
Well, they can do some alternatives. One is for bank accounts and brokerage accounts, they could set up payable on death funding so that if they, when they do die, it will go to whom they've designated. They could also create joint tenancy accounts, although there you have to be concerned about credit problems with the person you put on as a joint tenant.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But if you have a small piece of real property and you want to put children or somebody else on as a joint tenant, you can do that. And then if the creditor issues aren't there. So that is another alternative to doing a trust. And also just leaving it in the person's name.
And the $150,000 or under only requires, it's a relatively simple with a declaration, is it not?
Right. If you do leave it in your own name and don't add a payable on death or something, then what you do is you wait 40 days after the person died. You fill out a declaration form. It's notarized. You attach a copy of the death certificate, and the person who's entitled to the asset then gives it to the bank or brokerage firm or the Department of Motor Vehicles, whoever is the one that's got the records of title for this asset, and then the asset's supposed to be transferred over, and those entities will rely on that declaration and not go beyond it
And in that kind of a situation, you do file something, do you not, with the Superior Court?
No, you don't have to. No.
You do not have to?
No.
Well, then that's relatively simple.
Yes.
Very simple.
Yeah.
What if you have a life insurance policy on yourself with a beneficiary, whether it's your wife or your children or whatever, and you decide that you don't want to transfer it into a trust? What are the consequences there?
Well, if you die owning an insurance policy, that policy is...
That means it's still in your name.
Right.
You haven't transferred the ownership...
To somebody else.
Okay.
So if you own it when you die, it is includable in your estate for federal estate tax purposes. Now, for many people, that's not a problem because the exclusion right now is $5,430,000 for all the assets the decedent had. But if the person does have more than that in assets, then adding the insurance just adds an additional tax burden. So people will try to avoid that by creating a trust that they then relinquish ownership to so that it's not includable in their estate. They wouldn't be trustee generally of that trust, and they certainly are not a beneficiary. So that would be the circumstance. Now, if it's going to a spouse and the spouse will probably consume it, then even if you do go over the exclusion, you might want to still leave the ownership that way in the decedent's name, as the owner, because you'll be entitled to a marital deduction for the federal estate tax purposes, and the surviving spouse will probably consume it before he or she dies. So all these different factors need to be looked at by whoever's doing the estate planning and come to the appropriate conclusion on how to treat things.
By the way, I want to let you all know NOLO, which produces a lot of very fine large paperback books for consumers primarily. And by the way, I want you to know that NOLO, N-O-L-O, is not a funder of your legal rights, but I'm a real believer in the fine work that NOLO has done, lots and lots of different books on various areas of the law. If you're trying to educate yourself about estate planning, there's a very good book. It's entitled Estate Planning Basics. And I would highly recommend that you might want to get it and start to educate yourself. If you're thinking of that you have enough in terms of assets that you want to set up a trust, I think it would be very helpful to you to do that. You can find it at probably any bookstore, or if you don't want to spend the money, and I think it's something like it's under $25, you can probably find it in your local public library in the consumer section. But I think it would be something really good for you to think about. David, when I have thought, and I'm not an estate planning attorney, and by the way, I see someone is on hold here. What I want to let you know about, we are doing, there is one person on hold, and I don't want to have you just on hold unnecessarily. We are doing this program live on, this is July 15th, by the way. We are live in the Bay Area. We're live on the internet at www.klw.org and have been live on the internet for several years now. We are recently live on the NPR satellite. And I give you the date because in a few minutes I will give you the local toll-free number. And I just don't want you calling at some other time. So we're doing this program live, and I, for the person who's on hold right now, I want you to be, I don't want you to, just to think, oh, gee, they won't take my call. We will get to you, but it's going to be quite a few minutes. And for those of you, wherever you are, if you are listening to us live on July 15th, I'll give you the toll-free number. And I want to tell you that David Hellman is an outstanding authority, and he's laughing as I'm telling you this, but he has been gracious in being on the program for many, many years. He is an incredibly competent and experienced attorney in estate planning and also taxation law. And so let me give you the toll-free number. We will not take any calls for a few minutes, so just hold off if you would. But it's 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. We won't take calls for another 15 minutes on the air, I don't think. So try to be patient with us if you would. David, when I think about estate planning and setting up a living trust, because I am not an estate planning attorney. I've been a consumer attorney for the last 30 years. Prior to that, I did other kinds of law. I think of putting the home, one's home, into a living trust. And that's for most people, most average people who are not incredibly wealthy. That's their major asset.
Right. And that is generally a good idea.
And why? Why is that a good idea?
To avoid probate and to make sure that the home is treated appropriately when you pass. You want some estate planning vehicle, so you either need a will or a trust, or you need to put it into joint tenancy so that it'll go to whomever you want.
Now, what if you are in a community property state? And let me, for the audience, let you know this. Besides California, other states that have community property law are Arizona, Idaho, New Mexico, Nevada, Texas, Washington, and Wisconsin. So what if you are in a, like in California, what if you are in a community property state? What's okay. The significance of that?
Well, it depends on how title to the home is held. If it is held, husband and wife as community property with right of survivorship, which is a California vehicle, then on death, if you don't have a trust, the surviving spouse can go to court with a petition, what's called a community property set-aside, and it's sort of a one-stop court event where the court will then transfer ownership of that to the surviving spouse. Now, there are some estate planning estate tax issues with just leaving it all to the surviving spouse, which is if something that hasn't happened in the 75-year-plus years of history of the federal estate tax, but if the exclusion amount ever did go down, then
from the $500,000,
from the $5 million.
Million. Pardon me.
$5,430,000.
Yeah.
If it went down from that, then you have the potential problem of having the surviving spouse have a taxable estate. Whereas if you had the house in a trust and the trust then on death split into subtrusts and the surviving spouse had half the assets and the decedent spouse was allocated half the assets, then you've precluded that from become the decedent's part from becoming taxable at the surviving spouse's death.
Could you give us a simple example with some dollars
sure.
in it?
If you have $1 million home, and that's...
Let's say free and clear.
Right. And it's free and clear, and that's your only asset.
Yeah.
Just to make it very simple. Then on death, if you have a living trust, normally the surviving spouse would have a half interest in the house, and the deceased spouse would have the other half, although for estate planning, I don't allocate the home into the deceased spouse's name because of the income tax rule that if you sell your home and you're an individual, you get to use the $250,000 exclusion.
Mm-hmm.
A trust cannot use that exclusion.
Oh, really? I see.
And the surviving spouse's portion of the estate is for income tax purposes, not a taxable entity. So it's all taxed to the surviving spouse. So mm-hmm. even though it's in the trust's name, the individual taxpayer, surviving spouse, gets to claim that exclusion.
So dollar-wise, can you give us
right.
what
well,
that means?
Well, so on the spouse's death, if the exclusion amount ever went down below $500,000, or let's say it went below the $1 million, then part of the surviving, and the surviving spouse, let's say, got it because it wasn't in a trust but was held as community property with right of survivorship. Then the surviving spouse has got this $1 million home. Surviving spouse dies, and if the exclusion amount is $500,000, then you've got a $500,000 taxable estate.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Whereas if the $500,000 had been in the deceased spouse's trust through some vehicle to allocate assets to that trust, such as a promissory note or some other vehicle, then there wouldn't be any tax, estate tax, on the surviving spouse's death either.
That's really interesting.
So both of them. So it's something that you need to plan through. And be careful about what you're doing and figure out what is appropriate.
In other words, unless you are an estate planning attorney, you shouldn't do it yourself. Is
Correct.
That what you're saying?
Right. You read the NOLO book to get a background so that you can ask good questions to the lawyer, but you want to go to a lawyer.
We want you to ask good questions, everybody, so keep that in mind. That's terribly important. What other things before, because I wanted to give you, you talked about, I guess, pay on demand. For example, if you have an account in your bank or savings account, a checking account or savings account, and let's say you've saved up a lot of money for some unknown reason, maybe... You know, you've been very careful about it. You've cheated your family by saving the money and haven't paid it for the family. But in any event, let's say you have $100,000 in either a savings or a checking account. And you decide that I don't want to put this in a trust. I don't want to leave it by will. You can execute something called a pay-on-demand instruction to the bank, can you
right,
not?
Yeah, so it's when the person dies, the person who's named to receive it takes the death certificate, and the bank will then pay them the money.
Now, how do you do that, practically speaking? Do you, the person who has the account, whether it's a checking account or a savings account, do you go to the bank and say, I'd like to execute a pay-on-demand document so that when my daughter shows up upon my death, you'll transfer my $100,000 to her?
Yes, and it's normally part of the signature card. When you establish the account, it's just part of that signature card.
So it's relatively simple.
Yeah, it's fairly simple.
And if you haven't done it originally, you can go back in.
And change it.
Yeah, okay.
Now, the problem with that is if the daughter either dies before you do and you forget to change it, or she dies at the same time you do, then you have a potential probate problem.
Okay.
And that's why if you put the account into a living trust, then that probate problem goes away because it's in there. The trust says where it goes, and the title of the account is in the trust, so you don't have that potential problem.
So that's what you would recommend,
yes,
generally speaking?
Generally recommend to clients, if they're doing a trust, put all your assets in the trust.
What is something called a Q-tip trust for married couples? What does that mean, and why is it significant?
Okay, for estate tax purposes, federal estate tax purposes, if you have a taxable estate, which means that the taxable portion goes over the exclusion of $5,430,000.
Per person.
Each spouse.
Whoever it is, yeah.
Okay. Or the individual.
Yeah.
So if it's going over that, if you're married, then a QTIP stands for Qualified Terminable Interest Property. And what it means is that... The trust is entitled to a marital deduction, and again, for estate tax purposes, you can give an unlimited amount to your spouse. And if you give an unlimited amount, well, I mean, whatever it is, then you do not pay any tax on that amount. But the Qualified Terminable Interest Property Trust has strings on it, which is that the surviving spouse who is entitled to the income from it only gets the income. But on the surviving spouse's death, it is taxable in the surviving spouse's estate, but the beneficiaries are designated by the first spouse to die. So the surviving spouse can't take the money and decide to leave it to a new spouse or somebody other than whomever the first spouse to die had left it to through their joint trust at that time. So it's a marital deduction, but it has strings on it as far as who the ultimate beneficiaries are.
Are there tax? Are there potential tax consequences for the final beneficiary on this?
No.
Okay.
But there are for the surviving spouse in that it's includable in his or her estate.
I see.
But to the extent that there is any unused estate tax exclusion from the first spouse to die, and if a federal estate tax return was filed, there is this concept of portability that unused exclusion amount goes to the surviving spouse's estate to use at the time that surviving spouse dies.
Conceivably, under federal law now, as I understand it, personal exemption from federal estate taxes is now $5,430,000.
Right.
That could possibly be just under $11 million, couldn't it?
Total, yes.
Total, yeah. Okay.
So it's a lot of money. It essentially excludes 98% of the people in this country having estate taxes.
Okay. Are there any other things that you feel, for example, obviously, if you have jewelry, if you have artworks, if you have household possessions, you have clothes that you think are really significant, but you don't have no documents for them. It's possible you may have, if you have valuable artworks, you may have documents for that, I suppose.
Probably you would.
Yeah. But jewelry, probably you don't. Household possessions, my 36-inch TV screen or whatever it is, you don't have particular documents for that. Well, what do you do in that type of a situation if you want to leave? I mean, people know what they can do, I suppose. If they have a will, you can say, I want to leave this and that and other to my daughter, this to my son, etc. But what about a living trust? Would you ever transfer or ever put into a living trust the language about who you want to have get your jewelry, your artworks, etc.?
Well, we do it in a little different manner. One of the things that I do, and I think most estate planning attorneys do, is that when you create the trust, you attach to the trust a list of all the assets that you are transferring into the trust.
Uh-huh.
Because there is case law in California, it's called Hegstead, and if for some reason, even though you've listed it to go into the trust, it has not gotten into the trust at the time you die, you can file a petition with the court and say, well, it was the intent of the decedent to put this in the trust, so court, please transfer title into the trust, and they will do that.
Really?
Without a probate. So
that's interesting.
What we do is we have a blanket clause that says all of the decedents, well, all of whomever is creating the trust, the settlors, trustors, whatever you want to call them, grantors, all of their assets, the personal property that's at their residence or some other place, is transferred into the trust under these terms. So that would normally pick up those kind of issues. But then instead of putting who gets them into the trust itself, we provide a list that the person fills out and just says, you know, we want this artwork to go to son number one, and this.
So you name on the list, you name what the personal property is and who is to get it.
Right.
Well, that's interesting.
And the reason for that is because those types of things change frequently if somebody falls out of favor.
So people have got to be nice.
Right.
What you're saying, you've got to be nice. If you're a beneficiary, you've got to be nice to your mom, your dad, or whoever it might be.
Or you might lose it. They can just cross it off and put somebody else down there.
Oh, dear.
But that's
no fun.
No. But that way, it saves having to amend the trust for those kind of minor things that frequently do get changed.
We have in the statewide version of the program, for those of you who may not be familiar, we are live in the Bay Area for a full hour. We're live on the Internet for a full hour. We're now live on the public radio satellite for a full hour. But we still record the first half hour, and we send it out to 15 stations that will air the first half hour next week. And so we have now about two more minutes of the statewide version, and I'm wondering, are there any issues that we haven't even touched upon, David, that you would like to briefly mention to alert people to, you know, wake up and
right. Well,
and think about them?
Well, if you do have over $150,000 of assets, you do need to do something. You either need to at least create a will or create a joint tenancy or put payable on death account titling if you don't want to do a trust, but you need to do something or there will be a probate. And for the reasons we've stated, it just makes good sense not to do the probate because of the cost, time involved, and the privacy issues.
All right. Again, what I want to mention is if this is something that you've been thinking about but haven't done anything about, I would highly recommend to you taking a look at the NOLO book on estate planning basics. It is very good. It's very comprehensive. There's a seventh edition. That's the latest edition of the book. And if this is something that you haven't even looked into and you do have some assets, I would highly recommend that you go take a look at it, either buy it or go to your local public library. All right. This is your Legal Rights Public Radio. I'm Chuck Finney. I have the great pleasure of having as my guest David Hillman, an attorney who's a specialist in both taxation law and estate planning, trust, and probate law, certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. Mr. Hillman is also a certified public accountant. His law offices are in Marin County. And I want to give you our toll-free number if you have a question wherever you are. If you're listening live to the program live, this is July 15th. I urge you to join us with your calls. If you're not listening to this program on July 15th, then it won't work. Our toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. We have a number of people who want to talk to you, David, and there is one person who's been on for quite a while, and I'll get to her in just a minute. Support for KLW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The San Francisco Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation, both in San Francisco and Marin County. And for a referral to a lawyer or the Bay Area Mediation Services Program of the Bar Association, call 415-989-1616, 415-989-1616. If you're in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. You can call your own 650-369-4149, 650-369-4149. In California, every county has a bar association and a lawyer referral service. You can call your own during normal business hours, tell them what your problem is, and they will do their best to find someone who's experienced and set you up for a half an hour consultation. In California, with minor exception, the charge for half an hour is somewhere between $25 to $35. That money does not go to the attorney. It goes to the lawyer referral service to keep that going. And one of the other things that I want you to be aware of is the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar of California has 11 specialties, and you can get in touch with it. You can Google California Board of Legal Specialization and find out in your area who these specialists are. and give them a call and find out what they will charge for an initial consultation. It's a great service. I'm a great believer in specialization, and it's a great way to do it. And one of the other things that we have now very recently is the National Board of Trial Advocacy, which also certifies attorneys throughout the United States. And so specialization is something that I'd like you to keep in mind if you think you may need an attorney. All right. I want to give you the number again, toll-free number, 866-798-8255. We're going to start with Judy. Judy, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you.
Sure.
Can you please explain what it means when they say, on the death of the deceased settlor, the trustee shall divide the trust estate into two shares, designated blah, 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 and yet the surviving spouse can still use anything in the trust that they want to? I don't understand what it means to divide it.
All right. I briefly mentioned the concept that subtrusts are created on the death of the first spouse. So that is what the division means. It's creation of two subtrusts, one for the surviving spouse and the other for the deceased spouse. And that's the division that you're referring to.
What does it mean or signify if the surviving spouse can use anything from that trust as needed, then what does it mean to divide it? It doesn't have any practical meaning that I can figure out.
Well, it has a federal estate tax consequence. That's the primary one.
Okay.
It also has an income tax consequence because the deceased spouse's trust is irrevocable and therefore needs to file a tax return. But the concept is that you're preserving the exclusion that the deceased spouse had. And for management purposes, normally the provisions are that the surviving spouse can have the income from, or one of the other beneficiaries, possibly children, have the income from the deceased spouse's portion of the trust, but does not get to the principal, potentially could borrow the principal, but doesn't really get to use the principal unless they've exhausted the principal out of the surviving spouse's portion. And then could go in and use the principal if it was needed for their health, welfare, or support.
Right.
Those are the general characteristics. So there are some consequences. There's not a lot of practical ones. It sometimes becomes a little bit of an accounting issue. And what normally happens is that on the first spouse's death, there is a division. There's what's called an asset allocation. And title is then changed so that the assets are titled with the surviving spouse, usually as the trustee, but then designated as either being in the surviving spouse's subtrust or the deceased spouse's subtrust.
Yeah, it's exhausting, isn't it?
I don't get it, but thank you very much for trying.
Let me, Judy, if this is something that you're thinking that you want to learn more about, I really do suggest that you pick up the NOLO book.
Yeah.
It's a great way of educating yourself. I designed this program 31 years ago with the idea of educating people about their legal rights and their obligations to try to avoid problems if possible, to try to anticipate what the consequences may be in doing this, that, or the other in the law. And so I'm a great believer in people trying to educate themselves so that they know what questions to ask. So try that. I know it's kind of, I could tell by your sigh on the air that this is kind of exhausting. Yes, it is.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for calling. Take care now.
Bye-bye.
All right. Sanjay, welcome to the program.
Yes, good evening.
Hi.
I had a question. I had a living trust created in 96, you know, when the limits on the estate tax were pretty low. And so they had created something called a bypass trust, et cetera. And I know that I now kind of need to talk to a lawyer. He says you need to kind of redo this trust, reset the old one, and create a new one that takes advantage of some of the newer, limits, of which is like $6 million per spouse or $5 million per spouse. And one of the things is that my wife is not a U.S. citizen. She's planning to become a U.S. citizen and apply for it in the next month or so. My old trust has a Q dot, which deals with where when one spouse dies and the other one is not a U.S. citizen. The question I have is that I was talking to this lawyer, and he said, yeah, I can create this new trust for you, which will kind of supersede the old one. And he said, if you want me to create it with a Q dot, it'll cost you, $6,000 instead of $3,000. Is it necessary for me to create it with a Q dot right now, given that she's planning to become a U.S. citizen almost instantly? Or
well,
should I just say, create it with a Q dot in case, I die before she becomes a citizen?
Right. Well, part of it depends, too, on whether or how much your total assets are. But unless you can assure your longevity and hers, you are at risk because she is not a citizen. And I do urge clients that they should become citizens for this reason. There's frequently a lot of emotional things that stop that. There are also sometimes for countries where people have come from that don't allow dual citizenship, there may be economic issues also about why not doing it. But you should take it into account when you're doing your planning.
Sanjay, I know you are in Fremont because Martin, who helps me on the program, my associate producer helps me on the program, has noted that. You mentioned something about you were quoted $6,000 to do the Q dot versus $3,000 otherwise. That hit me hard, and I was looking at David when you said the $6,000. That sounds awfully high. I'm going to suggest to you something that you might feel that you want to look into further. The California Board of Legal Specialization, the statewide number is 415-538-2100, 415-538-2100, or you can go to the website, go to the internet at www.calbar.ca.gov, and go to the left of the screen that says Legal Specialists, and then look in your area, which is Alameda County, and see who the certified specialist in estate planning are, and give a call and see if you might make an initial appointment with an attorney and get a second opinion. I think it's very important in that you said your trust, living trust, was 1996. Is that right?
Correct.
Yeah. I think you need to do a little bit more investigation of this before you agree to pay maybe as much as $6,000.
Right. It's also possible that your existing trust would work until your wife does become a citizen.
Yeah.
And therefore, you wouldn't need the Q dot. Although the Q dot language itself is not that complicated. It's only a couple of pages, so it's not a lot of
so effort. You may be paying $3,000 for a couple of pages?
Right.
Oh, boy. Okay, you be careful, Sanjay.
Okay,
yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling. By the way, someone called earlier this afternoon and talked to the announcer operator, Kevin Vance. Nice to have you with us, Kevin, by the way. And she said this. She is a senior on fixed income. She has written a living trust from a Nolo Press book. Maybe Nolo made this call, huh? How do I find an attorney who can look it over, pro bono or for a limited amount? Well, I don't know where she called from, but I highly recommend whatever county you are in, what you might want to do is call your County Bar Association Lawyer Referral Service and say, can I set up a half an hour consultation with an attorney who does estate planning? Because I'd like someone, an estate planning attorney, to review the living trust that I've prepared. And you will pay, I think, nearly everywhere in the state of California, no more than $25 or $35. And that's a great way to do it. If that is even too much for you, since you are a senior on a fixed income, you might inquire of them, are there any attorneys in the Bar Association in your county who might be willing to give me a consultation for no charge? Sometimes they'll do it.
Or through legal aid, possibly.
Or possibly through legal aid, your county's legal aid office. So that's what I would suggest there. And for those of you who've tuned in the last few minutes, this is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We've started the program on should you transfer your property into a living trust. My guest is David Hellman, an attorney who's a specialist in both taxation law and estate planning, trust, and probate law, certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. He's a certified public accountant, and offices are in Marin County. And our toll-free number, and we have every line that's going right now, but we're doing this program live on July 15th. If you hear it live, try to get in if you can, 866-798-8255. And our next caller is Peter in El Cerrito. Hi, Peter.
Hi, how are you?
All right, thank you.
I'm very grateful for your program. It's helped me before, and I really hope that I'm not going to waste your time asking you something that might be a little off the topic, but is related to the estate planning question. It's a kind of an urgent situation. I am the designated power of attorney. There are actually two of us who are designated as power of attorney for a person who is currently in intensive care, and he is sedated. He may not make it. He may be gone within a week or less. The problem is I noticed that the power of attorney form was never notarized. He initialed it. He filled it out. He did not sign it. It was not notarized. Does that render it truly null and void? Because we're in a position where we're doing things like paying his bills and his checkbook and such like that.
Wow.
Yeah, if it's not adequately notarized, then you have a problem, and it is not a valid document.
Yeah, well, I guess you answered my question.
What suggestion do you have for him, if any, at this point?
Well, were there any potentially powers of attorney put on the bank account so that you, independent of this general power of attorney?
That's a great question, and I don't know the answer. We probably could find that out without too much trouble. He's left a really good paper trail, and I should also mention that we spoke to a notary who was reluctant to notarize it when he was in a delirious state.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Legally, the notary can't.
That's proper. That's proper.
Well, I'll check it in. I'll check with on the bank end of it.
Were there any witnesses, Peter, when this friend of yours initialed this? Were there any witnesses there?
Not that I'm aware of.
Yeah,
no.
Because that could be potentially an alternative that might be recognized.
It's possible because we have his five wishes form, which was filled out at the same general period of time where there were two witnesses, and it is possible they were done at the same time.
You need to get in touch with him.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. And presumably he does not have a trust, and this account wasn't designated to go into the trust. Because
that is what we believe, yes.
Okay.
His assets are south of, they're lower than $150,000,
okay.
But they're in that ballpark.
All right. Well, good luck, Peter.
Thank you. Thank
you very much for calling.
Okay,
and
no.
Now we have Victoria. Welcome to the program. Victoria calling from Richmond.
Right. Thank you for taking my questions. I have two questions. One is, I'm not quite sure I understand the difference between a will and a living trust and why a living trust is perhaps more, is better than a will. That's number one. And number two, when you go to a bank and you sign up, you open an account, they ask for a beneficiary. Is the beneficiary... is that the pay-on-demand thing that you referred to, you were talking about earlier? Thanks.
Okay. A will is a document that, if your assets exceed the $150,000, will need to be probated. A living trust, if it's properly funded and properly drafted, will not require a probate. When you do create a trust, normally a will is also created with it, and it's called a pour-over will, P-O-U-R-O-V-E-R, and that means the will is basically a fairly short will. It says, I've created this living trust. If for some reason I left an asset out, pour it over into the trust. So it's used as a backup. But otherwise, a general will, if you've got assets over 150 that don't pass to somebody other through joint tenancy or some other vehicle payable on death, then you would have to do a probate. So that's the difference between a will and a trust. And then for your other question, and can you repeat what you...
That's the one on the going to the bank and you fill out something.
Oh,
who's
yeah.
the beneficiary?
Right.
On the
well, that is the payable on demand account, and that does create the beneficiary there. The problem that you have is that if that person dies before you do, or the other person, whoever's counted is, then you have a problem, because then you've got a probate asset if it's not changed.
Okay, thank you so much.
Okay, thank Victoria, thank you very much for calling. Now we have Sandy from San Rafael. Hi, Sandy.
Hi there. I don't know if this is on topic, but I thought I'd give it a try. I have a friend who's trying to apply for a mortgage, and he just discovered that a lender that was involved with his Chapter 7 bankruptcy in 2010 had refiled a notice of default. And so it has reset the clock another 4 years. He thought he had waited long enough after the Chapter 7.
I think this is a bankruptcy question.
Yeah.
Which David is not. What I'd like to suggest to you, Sandy, is we will be doing a Call a Lawyer night at the end of this month, actually on July 29th. Usually, we have a certified specialist in bankruptcy law who's really terrific, Leon Baer, down in L.A., who will take calls the next day. So if you can wait until the end of the month, I will announce his 800 number when he makes himself available on the Thursday after the last Wednesday of the month. And that will be on July 30th. And I'll give out his 800 number on the air if you can wait that long. Can you?
Yeah, that would be great.
Yeah. So listen to the program on that evening, on July 29th, that Wednesday. We're going to do a program on mediation of disputes involved in employment law. But we will also have attorneys here off the air for Call a Lawyer Night, which we do every month. And then Leon Baer usually is available the next day, Thursday, between 8 a.m. and noon on an 800 number down in L.A. And there's no obligation, by the way, when we do Call a Lawyer Night. These attorneys who show up here at the station, what they really like, and the reason they show up, is because I provide pizza. And so there's a give and take here. But Leon gets no pizza because I don't want to mail it, you know. But in any event, if you would like, please wait until the end of the month, and I'll give the 800 number.
Great. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks very much for calling. All right, and we have Sherry from Berkeley. Hi, Sherry.
Hi, thanks. I've been recently divorced. My husband and I, we did it ourselves. We co-own a house. And just listening to your program made me think that we have done nothing to ensure any sort of asset protection. The way it's written is that, you know, the house rolls over to whoever survives.
What is the title? What is the title in, Sherry? Both of your names?
Yes, it's in both of our names.
How does it read? Do you know?
Well, we didn't change the title.
How did it read originally?
It was my name and his name as co-owners,
I
guess.
Did it say husband and wife as community property?
Oh, it may have, probably.
You need to find that.
Right,
okay.
And what you want to do is, both of you want it to go to the survivor, if one of you dies, is what you want.
Yeah.
All right.
So you're still friends, huh?
All right.
Yes.
So
well,
all right.
That's good.
So what you want to do, though, is, since you're no longer husband and wife, then you would want to make it into joint tenancy with right of survivorship.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
If you did not want it to go to him, and he didn't want it to go to you, then what you would do is you would create a co-tenancy. So it would read each of your names as to an undivided 50% interest, all as tenants in common. And then you'd need a will or a living trust that would take care of that half.
Okay, well, that's my question, because before this happened, I always figured, community property then gave me that tax benefit. And in this case, if he dies, am I responsible for the...
Well, now you're getting into too many things. Sherry, let me ask you this.
Sorry.
What do you think the property is worth on the market?
Probably a little over $1 million.
Who's living in it right now?
I am.
And where is he?
He's in Virginia.
Oh, he's in Virginia. Okay. So you're living in a property worth $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
What are the mortgages on it?
There's no mortgage.
Oh, wow. You know, Sherry, I think it really... Do you work, by the way?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it would be really wise for you to get some good legal advice, really.
Mm-hmm.
You got an incredible asset there.
Right.
And the longer you stay there in that home...
Mm-hmm.
The more it's going to be valuable because you're in Berserkly, or I should say Berkeley,
mm-hmm.
and that's a very delightful place to live in.
Oh, I know. That's
and
very,
so,
attractive.
So, yeah. So my suggestion to you, and David, please, make any suggestion you like. I think, Sherry, at this point, with that kind of a piece of property, I think you should call the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. Did you jot down the phone number I gave before?
Well, I can...
No, I'll give it to you right now.
But...
You have something to write with?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, 415-538-2100.
I'm sorry, I didn't get the last.
Yeah, 538-2100.
Okay.
And then you can go to the internet at www.calbar.ca.gov. And then go to the left of the screen, toward the top of the screen, where it says Legal Specialists, and then click that on, and you'll find out, for example, who the estate planning specialists are in Alameda County. And what you might want to do is, call one or two and find out what's it going to cost me to have an initial consultation with the certified specialist in estate planning. Do you agree with that?
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
And
okay.
And that, Sherry, this is just valued too much for you not to do this.
Okay.
For both you and your husband not to do this. Does he have another home in Virginia?
No, he doesn't. He's renting an apartment.
I see.
It's a very weird situation.
Well,
it
sounds kind of weird, but...
I tried to convince him that we should have a lawyer look at things, but he wanted to do everything himself because he's...
He's a doctor, is he?
No, he's not.
Because I used to represent doctors, and they thought they knew everything, frankly.
Oh, that's what he thinks, yeah.
Yeah. So in any event, that's what I suggest. And frankly, if you don't want to contact the California Board of Legal Specialization, you can have an initial consultation. I don't feel for something that is this valuable that you would want to chintz on this, but you could call the Alameda County Bar Association Lawyer Referral Service, ask for a half an hour consultation with an attorney who does estate planning. You'll pay $25 to $35. I don't think that really is, in my opinion, a wise investment of so mm-hmm. little money because you're not going to get the kind of legal advice that I think you need. And that number, however, is 510-302-2222.
Okay.
Yeah. Good.
All right, I'll probably better going to the first option.
The California first Board of Legal step. Specialization. Yes,
okay.
I think so. Okay. Take care of yourself.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye. And let's see, we have Elaine from Berkeley. Hi, Elaine.
Hi.
Go ahead. You're on the air.
Well, my question is my mother has a living trust for her house in San Francisco. When she passes, does it remain in the trust? What should I do once she passes? I have to put it in another trust?
Well, you are a beneficiary of the trust, are you?
Yes.
Are you also a designated trustee?
Yes.
Okay. Well,
all right.
Go ahead, David.
Okay. The terms of the trust will tell you what should happen. Most trusts would say that the assets would be distributed after your mother does pass away, and then it would go to you and
mm-hmm.
siblings or whomever else is designated. And generally, it would be a good idea for you to have your own trust and to put the assets into. So that's...
I'm sorry, I missed what you said.
Well, so if, yes, you would end up taking it from your mother's trust and putting it into your trust, assuming, are you the only beneficiary or are there other beneficiaries?
Right now, it's just me. I have a brother, but right now, it's just me.
Okay. Well, then the house would be transferred out of that trust, assuming that that's what your mother's provided. Now, maybe she's provided that it's to stay in the trust, her trust, for a period of time, maybe to go to your children or something, if you have children. So you need to read the trust and see what it says.
Oh, I see. So it can remain in the trust that it's in.
It could, if that's what the terms of the trust say. You need to read
and
the trust.
Not, maybe I could go and make sure that is established with an attorney.
Potentially, you could. Your mother could amend her trust if that would be something that would be desirable.
And you know, one of my sons has these outstanding student loans. If he ever received the trust, could the student loans come and take something out of the house if it's still in the trust?
It depends on whether it's a self-settled trust or not. If it's not, if he didn't create the trust, though they could not, other they could attach whatever he received from the trust, but they couldn't go to the trust asset underlying. They could only get the income that would come out of it.
Tell me, Elaine, how much is in the trust? What value would you say?
It's just the house.
Well, what's it worth?
About $1 million.
Well, okay. As I told Sherry before, you really need to get some legal advice, nose to nose.
Okay.
Don't chintz on this. Did you get the phone number for the Board of Legal Specialization?
No.
No, okay. I'm going to give it to you again in a minute or so because I think it's very important. I want you to write this down as you hang up, and I want you to either call the Board of Legal Specialization at 415-538-2100. Okay, please don't talk while I'm trying to give this to you.
Okay.
All right, hang up if you would. Elaine, hang up, Elaine. Or go to the internet, and it's www.calbar.ca.gov, and go to the left, up toward the top to legal specializations. Click that on and try to find the certified specialist in your area. It's very important. David, I want to thank you very much.
Well, I've enjoyed it.
For joining us, your wonderful guest, David Hellman, specialist in both tax law and estate planning, trust, and probate law, certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization of Estate Bar. Mr. Hellman is also a certified public accountant, offices in Marin County. David, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Very nice to have you here. Your Legal Rights production staff members are program engineer Kevin Vance, who is very nice to have with us. I hear some interference on the line here for some reason. I don't know what it is. And my production assistant is Martin McLean. By the way, next week, you might be interested in this. The topic is basically family law, but we're focusing on biblical mediation, which focuses on reconciling positive relationships for couples in divorce or domestic trouble. My guests are John Thomas and Kimberly Thomas, husband and wife. John's a certified family law specialist by the National Board of Trial Advocacy, and Kimberly is a co-mediator and co-conciliator in mediation with John, and that's to mediations for couples in divorce or trouble. All right, this segment of Your Legal Rights has been funded by the California Board of Legal Specialization. Additional funding for the program is provided by the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar, the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, the California Applicants Attorneys Association, the San Mateo County Bar Association, and by the National Board of Trial Advocacy, which also funds the public radio satellite transmission of the program. Thank you for joining us on Your Legal Rights Public Radio. I'm Chuck Finney. We'll